I'd like to read you from the vision by Swami Ramdas. And this is about a God-man. The aim of an aspirant is spiritual perfection, that is, an all-round divine illumination of his life, both internal and external. He has to realize God within him and his power active in the manifestation without him. This blessed state can be possible only when the ego sense completely leaves him. The path is identification with Purusha, the calm, silent, and all-pervading witnessing spirit, and surrender to Shakti, by whose will all activities take place in the universe. Before God thought seizes the aspirant and sweet emotion of love for him rises in his heart, he should develop an inner detachment to the things of the world. It is the attraction for these that prove an obstacle in his march to divinity. Hence it is rightly said that to strengthen spiritual practice, dispassion is absolutely necessary. So renunciation of all clingings to objects of the senses is essential. It is no good to merely give up external contacts and possessions if the heart is still longing for them. The real state is that of a being who possesses things and is not possessed by them. Man is usually a slave to the sense objects while he ought to be a master of them. The slavery is evident when one's mind is highly disturbed, when one is about to lose or has lost anything he possesses, or anyone to whom he is related. But the spiritual hero is he who lives in the midst of the world and is still unattached as a true servant and devotee of God, having no sense of actorship or ownership. Man's purpose here is to serve God who brought him and all beings into existence. He has to serve the world. He has to serve the world not as such, but as God. This service is the gift of God vision. For him there is no thought or feeling or work but for his eternal beloved. He will tirelessly wear his life out in his service and enjoy thereby rare peace and ecstasy. When God engages such an illumined soul for his work in the whole, his sole concern will be about the ignorant, the suffering, the indigent, and sorrow-stricken souls. He will employ every available means to relieve their distress. He does all things in a spirit of dedication to God, for whose sake alone he lives and acts. For him, service of humanity is worship of God. In his vision, the light and power of God alone shines and radiates. It is natural that the mission of a servant of God should be misunderstood by those who have no clear perception of a spiritualized life. He seems to be acting to all outward appearances like an ordinary man who is caught in the clutches of mundane desires and ambitions. The great and predominant difference between one who has reached the supreme spiritual status and the one who is obsessed by ignorance is the former has discovered within himself a never-failing source of happiness, while the latter is thirsting for such happiness, and is therefore restless, impatient, and miserable. While again the latter toils and moils day and night for procuring things of the world, thinking that by so doing he would attain happiness but does not, the former is ever contented and blissful, being in tune with the divine, who is eternal bliss and peace, and serves God and humanity as a liberated soul. While such a one moves in the light, the other stumbles in the dark. Light is righteousness, and darkness is unrighteousness. The contrast is striking. While the former looks upon the whole world as his family, the latter is attached to only a small group and is interested only in its welfare. It is by widening his vision from the individual to universal that he extends automatically his sympathies and love for all beings and creatures in the world. Man, in his conceit, thinks that he does actions by his own power. It is so because he forgets that God is the motive power that causes all movements. God is the giver, and he is the receiver. Whatever he possesses belongs to him. He is born to realize God and serve him. He is a mere puppet in divine hands. In a second, God can make a thing, and in the same period, he can unmake it. His will is supreme. To bend and bow to that will alone enables a man to realize his union with him. It is man's to live, move, and have his being in him in all states, conditions, and situations. He has to make his life flow like a sparkling stream. having all the time unbroken contact with Him and experience the resultant bliss and peace. Having realized God as the immanent and transcendent Spirit who has become manifest as all beings, creatures, and things, He can still be to you an intimate, ever-present companion, friend, and protector. This personal relationship with Him sweetens your life in a marvelous manner. His presence enthuses you and guides you at all times. He makes you the vehicle of His infinite love and mercy. He uses you as His instrument for spreading peace and goodwill on the earth. You are one with Him, and at the same time you are His free and cheerful servant and pure and radiant child. You may reach the height of His impersonal nature. You may dissolve your little self in His all-pervading and infinite consciousness. You may behold Him everywhere. But communion with Him as a personal truth and ideal is a rare and exalted experience. Now you can converse with Him, play with Him, and be ever joyful in His company. In this state, you never feel lonely, even in the most desolate solitude. You feel His presence not only there, but even in the midst of multitudes. He is your never-failing friend. It is strange that He is not a person in the sense in which you see and feel about the forms of beings about you in the world. Both the devotee and his God belong to a realm other than the one which is gross and material. This eternal beloved is yours. Of yours is not only an embodiment of love and joy, but also a personification of power. It is for this fellowship you discard everything else. It can remain unbroken even after you realize your identity with Him by the merging of your separate individuality into His cosmic existence. Before this blessed state of mind is attained, there is the tug of war, there is the hide and seek, there is the touch and go, and the resultant moments of pain, longing, and despair. These things are not for you who have achieved the grandest consummation of your spiritual quest by making God as your own, your one true, constant, and immortal companion. It is a mystic union. Pardon me. It is a mystic union, a dual role of the same supreme truth, at once personal and impersonal. You look upon Him in various ways, as a friend, a master, a mother, a father, a comrade, a lover, and even as a child. Whatever the mode of relationship, the continuous presence and contact with Him brings you a unique peace and joy, compared to which every other delight pales into insignificance. So the first thing you do in order to know and love God is to become aware of your kinship with Him. Verily you are born of Him, a spiritual offspring inheriting the great originator's nature and qualities. This recognition of relationship with Him through continuous thoughts and meditation of Him dissolves the screen that separates you from Him, and thereafter you always bask in the sunshine of His divine presence and feel that the Beloved is always with you, never losing Him for a moment, ever enveloped by His love and His radiance. The truth that Ram Dass puts forth in everything that he writes is absolutely as great a truth as you can find anywhere, as high and as beautiful. It is universal truth in its purest sense, and so always I am thrilled to share with you whatever I have that comes from him, even as that from my own master. Somebody asked on Sunday if we ever had question and answers, and I informed them that we have had, and when I've asked for questions, everybody just sat. So I told them we'd have a question and answer period tonight. If somebody has a question, let's have it. The person here who asked that question on Sunday? Well, no, isn't that interesting? Very interesting. All right. Let's have a question from someone else.
Well, I have a question. You've answered it for me already, but I think the group might be interested in what you told me about the symbolism of the burning bush.
All right.
Besides, I could use a little more, too.
Well, Jean was over one evening recently, and she has a very alive Sunday school, Kathy and Herlin have been working with these children, and they have come a long way. My young grandson, who is 4, last night put his hand on the Bible right after talking to me and said he was going to read the whole thing. It's amazing. And every now and then, the little children, different ones from different families, are heard singing the chants and talking about the star and how this is the gate of heaven and how if they open that gate, they will find God inside. And they're very fascinated, very interested, and it's a wonderful thing. So apparently this question of the burning bush came up. Moses and the burning bush. Isn't that how it happened?
Oh, we're reading the Bible
story. We're reading the Bible story, and that was it. All right. So Moses represents the law. In the Hindu scriptures, he is called Manu. And the burning bush is, of course, the body, because it is, as I've said many times, variously referred to as the bush, the tree, the house, the cross, the church, the temple of the living God, and probably a few more things. Oh, yes, and the robe that is also spoken of after the crucifixion of Christ. It is this robe of the body which is spoken of. Now, as we have discussed many, many times, this electrical fire which sets the bush on flame is the kundalini force at the base of the spine. That is a force which the serpents, or the Christians call the serpent force. So when the individual starts to go through the higher spiritual experiences, this force is activated and starts to rise. Prior to that time, this force, which is the life force within you, has been dissipated through misuse, through overindulgence in sex, through many, many things, and with the complete centering of the attention on the senses. But when the spiritual aspirant's heart, mind, and soul reach out for God, it is a tremendous, tremendous experience and uplifting and uplightening and enlightening, I should say. It is beyond human description. My daughter, whom I asked you to pray for tonight, is going through one of these experiences now, and she is having quite a time. And she is surrounded by all Orthodox Christians. And believe me, they are giving her a bad time and putting her through her paces. And she can do nothing but hang on to God. And she's all by herself in the midst of this. And it is an experience I know because I have been through it. So when this force is activated and this serpent force or kundalini starts to rise in the spine, it is an electrical force. And it is this same electrical force which permeates this whole universe and which brought it into being. So it is hot. It is hot. And you feel this burning sensation not only in your spine, but in your whole body at times, as I have described to you before. I have had this experience to the degree where I've had to lie down on a bathroom floor made of cold tile because it was the only means I had of cooling my body and just roll on it in my bare skin until I got some relief from this burning. My whole skin, every place, was just as red as a beet, and it would come on unexpectedly. And so as the consciousness rises, this force arises in the spine. And you meet Moses, the law, because you have had the use of that law. You have determined whether you have been on the right side of the law or on the wrong side of the law. And so as this return to God, to your state of truth, of being in the real sense of the word, starts, and you put your feet upon the path, then you will meet subconsciously and consciously many of the things that you have stored in your subconscious mind, and they are the result of the actions, the thoughts, the words that have come from you, not only during this lifetime, but many times during other lifetimes. And if there is any doubt in your mind about such a thing as reincarnation at that time, it will be dissipated, I can assure you. Because many times you are taken back into other lifetimes and shown the reason Why? You are paying the price you are now. And that price is great. As it says in the Bible, that the pearl of God realization is the great price. It must be paid for with every single thing you, as a human being, have and are. There must be no withholding whatsoever. You have to give all that you call yourself, your own, all of your possessions, your relatives, your family, everything has to be surrendered at the feet of God if you are going to reach this final experience. Now, many people say, do I have to leave my family? In the Christian Bible, it says so, doesn't it? It says that you must leave your father, your mother, your husband, your wife, your brothers and sisters. Pick up your cross and follow me. But does it really mean that literally? Or again, are we dealing in a parable? I know that we are dealing in parables from that standpoint. Because what you must lose, you must give up your attachment to them. Your possession of them and by them. This absolutely has to go. This doesn't mean that you deny any of these loved ones. It doesn't mean that you forsake them in the outer sense, because they are a part of your very self. You could not if you would, I know. Because when I was going through this experience in India, I threw everything I had, my husband, my children, my possessions, we had given them all up before we went to India, and I threw everything in the ocean. Because I had the idea that this is what I must do. I must give up all attachment to them. I had to get rid of it. I came out of it with a love that was so great for each and every one of them that it was unbelievable. And I couldn't understand it when I had so sincerely, so wholeheartedly decided to give up everything in order that I might get my God realization. Why I came out of this particular experience still in this state and to an even greater extent. So I was with Swami Ram Dass at that time, and I went to him and told him of my dilemma. And he said, ah, yes. He said, well, if you cannot get rid of them that way and leave them, he said, then see them all as God. Well, that was very easy. So I haven't had any difficulty since. And I can never understand a religion that tells you to actually get rid of anybody around you that you love. People or children that you have born in your body, your husband, your wife, your father, your mother, your sisters, your brother, whatever. Because we are all sisters and brothers. We are all one in spirit. And we are all one in God. He is our common Father. We could not get rid of them if we even chose. So it is obvious that we must give up the attachment to them in the human sense and make that love that we have for them expand. And expand and expand until it becomes divine love, which is both personal and impersonal. As I've told many of you, my love for you is a very personal thing, as all of you know. I work very differently than many of the gurus that I've seen. Master worked the same way as I do. I emulate him, I suppose, because he was the one who was instrumental in helping me to put my feet on the path to God. But there are many who are completely impersonal. Ram Dass was one of these, at least he was during the time I was there. And when I went to him with a great need for help and for comfort and went into his arms and tried to embrace him, he pushed me away and he said, why do you need it? He just put me out there all by myself. He wasn't going to let me have one little tiny thing in the human sense to cling to. Mother Krishnabai did the same thing. And yet when I went back 10 years later, she herself got down and prostrated on the ground full length and put her head on my feet. She insisted on doing this every time she saw me. She gave me great love. And there was a total change in her. Why? Because God was directing them to give me no quarter, because as long as I hung on to anything in the human sense, I would not have reached the goal that I started out to reach. It would have been literally impossible. And I many times think how very, very difficult it was for Ram Dass to have been with me during that time. But he went into it like he was charging into a battle. And we fought a duel. Believe me, many's the time I sat before him. each advancing and retreating, each seeking to do only the will of God. And I wrote a poem to him about that after I came through this experience. Because I expected that having come through that experience, that that was all. So where were all the promises that I would have a new body in Christ? That I would be completely uplifted? Where was the bliss that I had been promised? I didn't have any of it. I looked like a mess. I was down to 102 pounds. My hair was hanging down to here. I was dressed in a white cotton blouse and a pair of white cotton pants because they had had to, because of this tremendous fire that was burning, this burning bush. The fever had been so great that they were afraid it would destroy the brain cells, so I'd been drowned practically because they had the boys form a bucket brigade to pour water over my head. So they all came, they sat me on the porch, and one after another dumped these great big vessels of water over me. I almost strangled, but it did break the fever. And it had to be broken because you must be taken care of when you're like that, or it can destroy the brain cells. So it is vitally necessary to have a guru, someone who knows what the score is, to help you over these very difficult moments. Now, there are very few on earth that will go through this way of the cross and the crucifixion in the way that I did, because there are many now who follow, and many who will in the future, God willing. And so this is the price I had to pay, not only for my own God realization, but for those who would follow afterward. But I am so thrilled that he made it so difficult for me, because it is such a vital, a vibrant, an unforgettable experience in my mind that I will never forget it. And it is so vitally there that every moment I speak about it to you or to anyone, I relive that experience. And how in the world could I explain the answers to these parables, to these things that are so covered up, just like a diamond is in the heart of a piece of coal which totally obliterates its brilliance, if I had not experienced them? And the longer I live, the more my consciousness is constantly seeking for greater heights in God realization, the more is opened up to me, until it just becomes really the most tremendous and fascinating adventure in the world. It never ceases. There is no entertainment any place that can in any way compare to that adventure that the enlightened soul puts his, when he puts his feet upon the path, so that he may find out who and what he is. And what he winds up with is absolutely tremendous. There's a story told in India about Shiva and Parvati. Shiva is the third person of the Hindu Trinity, and Parvati was his consort. Somebody asked me the other day if it was true that Krishna and Radha were married, and then he also had affairs with the gopis. And if so, why, he certainly wasn't anything like the Christian Christ, because that was blasphemous. That was evil. And they only show their ignorance when they speak that way, because Radha represents the feminine, the female, the nature of each and every man. It is the individual soul seeking oneness with the Christ or Krishna consciousness. And I told you the story Sunday about the pearl tree and how Krishna planted a pearl which his mother gave him, and he put it in the ground and it broke forth its outer shell and it grew into a beautiful pearl tree. And so Radha came to see the pearl tree, but her vision was so blinded through the darkness and ignorance which was within her and her lust for material things that she couldn't see it. And so she had to wait until her vision had cleared, and when finally she was able to see it, she reached out for the light. She reached out for Krishna as her Lord. And so this is the eternal story of the bridegroom and the bride. If Krishna committed blasphemy when he is said to have been married to Radha, then Christ also did, because it says that he is the bridegroom and we are also the brides. So wherein lies the difference? It is the same principle of the marriage of the soul to the eternal Christ, who is the first and only begotten Son of God, and who is universally present in every atom of space and every single form that walks the earth. This burning bush is really something to deal with. And as you feel this fire within you, it is a fire which is different than anything that you can possibly describe. It is different than a burn on your hand when you put your hand over a flame or on a hot stove or on an iron. It is more intense. It is more electrical in nature. What is it doing? It is purifying. It is purifying. As it rises in the spine and meets every spinal center, it spreads out. It fans out. And it purifies all that it comes in contact with. Now, as we know, fire is very painful when we experience a burn from it. But it is a very necessary thing for purification. We are all sparks of light from that one great fire of God. Each single soul is that spark of light from God. And when you realize the truth of who and what you are, and that you are not just a part of life, you are not just one body, but that you are all of life, and that you contain all of life within yourself, and that this spirit which inhabits you will never die, that it has always been alive because it is eternal, it is infinite. It is a tremendous realization to realize who and what you are. The body becomes totally unimportant in the sense that you think of yourself as the body. You keep it clean, you keep it attractive, as attractive as you can, in honor to that one who dwells within. But per se, it doesn't actually mean anything to you, because you realize that you are not the body. You are not the body. I think I've quoted this poem to you, which was given to me, maybe it's a prayer, it was part of each, I guess, many years ago when I was meditating. And this is the way it was given to me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I lay the flowers of my devotion on the altar of my love for you. My listening mind waits in silence while my soul softly chants its song of devotion to you, my beloved. Gradually I am aware of thy presence, enfolding me in thy arms of everlasting bliss. Suddenly I realize, I am not my body, I am not my mind, I am not my soul. Thou hast absorbed these in thy flame of eternal light. I am forever one with thee. And I was lifted up out of the body consciousness into this great frame, a flame of light. This great flame. I started to tell you about Shiva and Parvati. Parvati, in that case, would also be the individual soul as the bride of the god Shiva. And so Shiva and Parvati were sitting one evening, and he was teaching her about the inimitable Lord. And so he asked her to sit and to fold her hands in the proper position and to go into deep meditation and to tell him what she saw. So she immediately sat down before the Lord. And she closed her eyes, and she went within her own temple. And he said, what do you see? My Lord, I see your form before me. And then there was silence. And he said, what now do you see? She said, I see a great light. What now do you see? She said, I hear the sound of Om. Go beyond that, he said. Now tell me, what do you see? And there was nothing but silence, because Parvati had become one with the infinite beloved who is beyond all duality. She was absorbed in him. And when finally she came out of this high state, she was heard to whisper, I am Brahman. I am Brahman. I am Brahman. This is the way it is when you go into that ultimate experience of bliss. It is so wonderful, so beautiful, that it is beyond the power of any human being to describe. You must experience it in order to realize it. And being in that high state of bliss, it is very difficult for you to come down, because it is such a tremendous, beautiful, wonderful experience that you want to float in that ocean forever. But if you are going to remain in a human body, you must come down and get your balance. But as you start to do this, still this flaming bush, this bush which is on fire, still continues to operate at various times. But the law is working a little differently now, because where before it was working individually, it starts working outwardly. And you get it not from the forces within yourself, but from the forces without. Because they do not understand that the great change has taken place in you, because you still have the same body of a man or a woman that you had before. You still have the same personality, the same habit patterns. You wear them as a cloak unconsciously. But the change within that one is complete and absolute, and people do not realize that at all. And so the war begins, and it goes on and on and on, and it is unbelievable what things are done in the name of Christianity, in the name of Christ, in the name of religion, and in the name of God. If I had not personally experienced them in my own life, and very recently, and even now, I would not have believed that such things could have happened today in a civilized world. But they are happening. And these people are gathering together in thousands all over. They have large groups, and they pray to cast out devils from those who have already gone all the way to God. But they're so blind that they cannot see. They claim that every word that comes out of their mouth is blasphemy, that they are telling lies, that they should be burned at the stake. And this is following the Christ. I remember one thing he said above all others, and I've quoted it many times, that you shall love one another as he has loved us. You shall love one another as I have loved ye, and your neighbor as yourself. But there's another one that is equally important. Whatsoever ye have done unto the least of these, ye have done unto me, said he. And still they call themselves followers of Christ. It is unbelievable, unbelievable. I thank God for his great grace in making me go through whatever has come to me in my life in the way of difficult experiences, so that I might know the truth, that I might see the Christ spread over all of space, that I might see him in every single form which stands before me and beyond, that I might know that he is that infinite power, intelligence, presence, and love which permeates this whole universe, and which in fact brought it into being. He is the carpenter, the builder of the universe. Not just one form, but that infinite spirit in every form. That is why this truth is so bright, that there is hope for you, for me, for every human being who lives, of attaining that state of Christhood, if he will but make the effort, if he will put himself aside, and if he will love God more than himself, if he will bend every effort to go to God. You cannot serve God and mammon too, but you must have balance. You can't go to God yesterday, you know, because you're already there. And so many times we talk and we talk. Last night I had a very interesting experience. For a change, the bed was going to hold my form at 10 o'clock. I don't know whether it could have stood the strain or not, because it's been the first time since I can remember that I made the effort. But anyway, that's the way it was. So I went into the bedroom, and I didn't have my machine on, which would record calls, because I always feel that I should leave it on in the night in case there's an emergency for which I am needed. So I went into the bedroom, prepared to go to bed. The telephone rang, and it was someone from Beverly Hills who had a problem. So I talked to her for a half hour, three quarters, I don't know exactly how long, and I hung up, and again I started getting ready for bed. The telephone rang. It was someone from New York, and it was then 2 o'clock in the morning back in New York. And this woman had tried to get me before. My line had been busy, so she was still going to get her call. And so we talked for a good half hour. I no more than hung up, and I got a call from Missouri. And finally I got to bed at 1 o'clock, 3 hours later. This is an amazing thing, but this is the way God uses you when you have given yourself to him. You have no life of your own. Now, at times it gets frustrating because, you see, in order to stay in a human body, you have to function in the world of duality, and while you're functioning in this world of duality, you react the same as anybody else. You're a master of your reactions. This is true, to a degree, but when they come at you so fast that you can't throw them over your shoulder, you know, it gets a little bit hectic sometimes. The other night, I got home at 5 o'clock. I had overshoes on. I managed to get my coat off, and the telephone didn't stop ringing. I had people come to the door and come in, and I had another engagement at 9 o'clock. The telephone still was ringing. At 10 o'clock, I hadn't had any dinner, and I still didn't have my boots off. So the deputy with whom I had an appointment at 9:30 took pity upon me and took me out to dinner to see that I got something to eat. He said, the only way that you'll get anything is if I take you away from all of this. So then I got to bed at 3 o'clock that morning because the work still had to be done. So this is the way my life goes. And yet people who are of a different faith say that I am an angel of Satan. They think I should be destroyed. This is true. And the things that they advise, those who would follow me, sometimes are really unbelievable. It's amazing. Now, this is all perhaps an aside from the original question, but it's all a part of it. You cannot separate one from the other, because believe me, it's going to be a battle, and it's going to be a great one. And the more we can get, the greater army we can build for God in truth, the greater is going to be our power to withstand all of this. But if it is God's will, certainly He will work it out. We don't have to worry about it from that standpoint, because everything that we need will be given to us. All the strength, the power, the outer places to move, whatever material needs we have will be given to us. We have but to do one thing, and that is to accept all things that come to us as His will, and to surrender ourselves to Him totally and completely, meditating all that we can, giving ourselves to Him in full measure, but doing one thing further, and that is constantly listening to His voice of direction. I'm perfectly willing to talk to anybody at any time, as time will permit, but in no way will I make decisions for you, because I am trying to help you to become masters of yourself so that you may stand on your own two feet and make your own decisions in God. I cannot live your life for you, nor do I want to, nor I am sure do you want me to. I had an interesting conversation with someone the other night, and it was very difficult because it was someone whom I loved very, very deeply. But this individual had sort of fouled up rather drastically, and they said to me, well, you must know the cause of this. And I said, God hasn't told me. Well, how come your God realized? I said, because I am surrendered to God, and that means I'm surrendered to God. And I take only what He gives me. I said, I've told you over and over again that I do not probe into anyone's mind nor their soul for my own personal curiosity. He gives me everything I need to work with the individual in accordance with His will, and I'm perfectly content that it be so. Because believe me, that's enough. I don't have to go searching for anything. By the time I get through working with that, I know I've done a day's work. And sometimes far more. Sometimes it mounts up into years and years and years. And it isn't the individual's fault by any means. I want to make that very clear. I have had people tell me things that have happened to them when they were very tiny, things their parents said or did to them, or someone else said or did. I've had these experiences in my own life. And the terrible, devastating result of this wrong handling of a little innocent child is absolutely terrible, with the mark that it makes. And so these things go into the subconscious mind, and maybe the child doesn't even remember what caused it or what it is. And yet there it is in there in the subconscious mind, a real trouble spot giving them trouble. They can't help it. They would get rid of it if they could. So am I to sit in judgment on them? Certainly not. I am only to love them. But also, every now and then I discipline a little bit, because this is what that man inside of me says, the infinite beloved, the man of the white nightgown, as I call him. He is with me constantly, guiding me, directing me, teaching me. Do you think I know everything there is? Not by a long way. I don't. How could I possibly? I know the path. I know the intimate and detailed way of that path because, as I said, through His mercy and His grace, He lifted me up and put me through it. And it was terrible what I went through. Absolutely awful. It resulted in death. The death of the human ego, which brings on this death-like state. But I glory in that experience, and I mean every bit that I say. If I had not been through all of that, would my soul have been tempered to withstand all of the things that come to me, to be able to handle each individual and each individual situation in the way that is best for them? I can't handle it, and I don't handle it. God handles it through me. Someone called me recently, and they used to be with me years ago, and in a way they still are, and I asked them what had been happening to them lately. Oh, they were healers, they said. I said, oh, how did that come about? Well, they had gone to somebody in Vashon Island, a Japanese lady, who had taught them how to heal. And so they were going around healing, and this had been their wish all their life. Now, they're good people. They're beautiful, wonderful people. But they are healers in that sense. To me, I don't ever use power. I never have. Because to me, God is the supreme healer. He is the supreme physician. And he alone knows when it is time for someone to be healed. I can't go out because I have deep compassion for the suffering of somebody and just lay my hands on them or do anything about them and say, I'm going to heal you because I'm so sorry for you. Because maybe it isn't God's will that that happen. Maybe they need that suffering. Maybe they need that experience in order that they will turn their faces to God. So who am I to interfere with his perfect plan? But he has many times used this form and has performed many tremendous healings, even with saints. So, the whole thing I leave to God. I try to do nothing of myself, and yet I am busy every minute. And it is a paradox. It is difficult to understand how both could be true. It's like the conversation I had with the great little saint over in India, in Benares, by the name of Madhupagala, which means mad for God. And he was doing everything all the time. And so I told him that I didn't think he should do this. I think I've told you this before. He worked on the minds of his devotees. He did this. He did that. And I told him he had no right to do it. He argued that he did. He said, they have come to me for direction. I said, have they placed their life in your hands? Did they give you permission to work on their minds when they're not conscious of the fact of what you're doing? No, but I still have that right. I said, I don't agree with you. Not whatsoever. I said, I leave everything in the hands of God. I am totally surrendered to him. This is his body, which he has made for his purpose. I am the infinite spirit within this individual soul, but of myself I am nothing. It is my Father who does every single thing through this form and for it. And it must be that way. Otherwise, where is acceptance? Where is surrender? And where is God realization if you're still doing it as a separate human entity? You do, and yet you do not do. This is the position of a God-realized soul, that one who's gone all the way and has attained that a supreme state, which is very difficult to attain, sahaja samadhi, when you are in the bliss of God 24 hours a day, and yet you are able to operate in the world in a fully balanced fashion, so that anybody who walks the street could not know that you had attained this tremendous state. This is true. You don't go around wearing a sign across the front of you, I am God realized, you know. You leave that for each one who comes before you to discover. And they see in you what is within their own consciousness, their own frame of reference. I receive the most beautiful love letters that you can possibly imagine. And it is my beloved God who is making love to me. And I give this same love. Yet I have no personal life of my own in that sense whatsoever. Now when I have to function in a personal vehicle, such as I am, work in this world of duality, this is a very difficult thing. Because I, too, find the need for the personal love, the personal companionship, but this has not been given to me. So I find it in all of you, because each one who comes before me is my infinite beloved. And it's the most beautiful, the most wonderful experience that anyone could have. It far transcends anything in the human state, which at some time or other lets you down. Many times you think the other fellow has let you down. But it is you yourself who have let yourself down, and you have not realized it. So in a sense, the God-realized soul is a physician, a healer, He's a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and he probes deep into the subconscious mind as he is directed, and he brings things to the surface. He even makes himself, sets himself up as a patsy sometimes in order to help that individual bring all of these things to the surface and to be able to see them, realize their unimportance, and to deal with them and get rid of them, or to balance them out and transform them into the divine. A guinea pig is what I'm trying to think of. It's true. Because whenever you're in this play, if you're going to be successful in what you're doing with any devotee on the path, you have to play the part up to the hilt. And in order to do that, you have to become that, to be that. Now, the people who look at such a one and they see what's going on, their minds and their start working, you know, this way, and the mouth starts buzzing. Oh, look, she says she's God. Realize, look what she's doing, or he, whatever the case might be. And they have the faintest concept of what the guru is like. No individual soul, I don't care who they are, can gauge the depth, the nature, the stature of the guru, who has attained oneness with God. Because they look at it from the human perspective, and it is not that way. Everything that is being done through that form is at the direction of God, regardless of its seeming appearance. And some who have been very close to me have finally come to realize that in full measure, because they have seen me work with this one, with that one, each in a different way and a different level, and each one I play a different role with. Whatever that one needs, it is not my need that I'm working with, it is theirs. So I give them what they want until they want what I want to give them, within reason. There has to be a line of demarcation someplace. I don't want to go down and drown in the puddle along with them. So it's a great play. It's a great play. But God is joy. He is happiness. We shouldn't go around with glum faces. We should feel this bliss of God. We should feel this joy of God. We should feel this love of God. Just like these people I was describing tonight. I love God in each and every one of them. That's what I preach. But I hate the things they are doing in the name of God. It is really a stench in his nostrils. And I plan to do something about it one of these days as God directs me. You know, there's such a thing as the righteous wrath of God, and vengeance is mine, says he. And when they've gone far enough, you know, and it is only God who's working in that form, look out. You know, you get to the point, I'm not very big, but maybe I could be described as a mighty mouse, huh? You've got to have courage to explore in your own subconscious mind. You've got to have the courage to take what the guru gives you, knowing that it is because of their great love for God in you that is bringing all of this forth, and that they're merely trying to help you to get what you say you want. That always and forever they are willing to sacrifice themselves to the utmost, to the last moment, the last breath of their lives, in order that you might be helped just even a little bit on the way up. And you know, I worked so many years, as I've told you before, sometimes not one came, sometimes only one blessed one came. And sometimes there were a few, and sometimes the place was full. And it was just up and down and back and forth, and now it's coming from all over. And the wonderful letters and the wonderful things that people say about the help they have received through God in this form. I give all to him. But it is fulfilling. And I think to myself many times, when I listen to just one who has had a very difficult time and has come through something that is really terrific for them to go through, and I know it, and I sympathize with them and have compassion for them, but I think it's so wonderful, so beautiful that they have come through this. And I think if I only had even that one, my life is not lived in vain. It is fulfilled because I brought one soul to the realization of who and what he is in God. So always and forever, I am your mother, I am your child, I am your sweetheart, your lover, your friend. I am whatever you need from me. Whatever you need. But that love is there because it is the love of God. But I can't do it alone. I keep stressing this. You must meditate. You must put aside some time each day for communion with the Beloved who is your very self within. You are seeking your true self, not a stranger. That one which you are, not someone way up in the heavens, but within the heaven of your own being. Because that's where the Christ said that God was to be found. That's where he said heaven was. So you can only find him within yourself. And having found him within yourself, then you come forth as a blazing light, as a magnet of God, to walk the earth and spread his name, his fame, and his glory. And you don't care about yourself. You only care about him. There isn't anything you wouldn't spend yourself for because you are serving your Beloved. It's like you fall in love for the first time with a man or a woman, whichever the case might be. And it's your real, true love that you feel. There isn't anything you wouldn't do for that person. Nothing at all. You would climb the tallest mountain. You would go overseas. You would swim. You would do anything. It doesn't make any difference what it was. You would build them houses. You would give them gifts. You would serve them night and day because your love for them is greater than your love for yourself. Any love between a man and woman that is not like that is no love at all. It is self-love. Because it takes two to make a marriage, not just one. And if one has to have it their own way all the time, it's no good. Because each of you are separate souls in God, separate sparks of God, separate entities, and yet we are all one in him. So each one must be permitted to be himself or herself, to express themselves as God designed for them. They must be themselves. They cannot live anyone else's life. No one can. And each life is different. And each life, regardless of how it seems, is beautiful, if you could only see it that way. If you could only see that each test which comes is but that, a test, an experience which is necessary to give you the insight and the power of overcoming within yourself so that you can conquer it and purify it and make it divine and use it in his name and for his service. The more this truth is known, the more you are willing to forget yourself in service to him, the more you love him and yearn for him, the more you meditate night and day, the closer you're going to get and the faster you're going to reach your goal. But there is one thing it says in the Bible. It doesn't say to spread yourself in all directions, to have your mouth constantly going. It says, be still and know that I am God. Because only in the stillness of your soul can you find your oneness with him. And you come out of that stillness then, and you see him in all of the activity, in everything and everyone that is on this earth and in this whole universe. It's the most beautiful, wonderful, fascinating experience that man can have. This search for his true self. What more can I say to you than to tell you that no matter what God has put me through, I glory in it. I am so grateful to him for every knock, for every kick, for every bruise I have ever had to go through, for every psychological battle I've had to fight, for all of the revilement, the persecution, the spitting upon that I've had to endure, and it's been plenty. The misunderstanding, all the rest of it. I think these were the greatest gifts he could possibly have given me because they have brought me to this moment of realization of who and what I am in him. And I wouldn't trade it for all the things of the world. None of them. I have a beautiful apartment. It is a place of peace, of beauty. And I've tried to make it that way for him. But if he said to me tomorrow, come, I want you to wear only one garment and to go sit under a tree or to walk the roads, I would gladly do so because I live only to do his will. So when you can do that, you have really arrived at the first step of your God realization. And until you're willing to do that and to work at it, you won't. I had a letter from a young boy in Canada the other day, and he is meditating 8 hours a day and hoping to increase it. Now, how many people are willing to do that? How many people have the desire to do that? And even if they are willing and have the desire, how many do it? It's just not a thing of the mind. You have to want to do it. But you will only want to do it when you start practicing. Because you have to work yourself into it, one little thing at a time. And as you secure that one thing, it will become two, and then three, and then four. And it will grow and grow and grow until you become absorbed with it. Until then, every part of you reaches out for it. But you have to begin at the beginning and take the first step. No one can do that for you. And no one should try to. It is your responsibility in God. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence. In every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. O Heavenly Father. Open my eyes that I may see Thy face. Open my ears that I may hear Thy footsteps everywhere. Open my heart that I may feel the glory of Thy love. O Heavenly Father. May Thy love shine forever. Upon the sanctuary of my devotion. May I be able to awaken Thy love in all hearts. And bring them to Thee. Choicest blessings upon you and lift you up and up and up until you become one with that glory, that radiance, that presence, which is your very self.